Most bankers aren't ready to help you until after their third cup of coffee. But with Central National Bank's after-hours service, you don't have to wait for the bank lobby to open to get help. You can contact us from 6 to 8:30 in the morning or from 5 to 10 in the evening, and we'll connect you to a real, live, local person who can answer questions and fix problems 7 days a week. Bank different. Bank Central. Central National Bank. Member FDIC.
F-bomb. This is Mandy and the F-Bomb. Hey, all, welcome back to the F-Bomb. So today we've got Slim Thompson, and he is as cool as his name sounds. Like, I don't know. He is a local pastor, and if you don't go to a church where your pastor's name is Slim, like, what are you even doing?
Right.
So he's also community advocate. He's a foster dad, and I'm excited to hear a little bit more about his family and his story. Thanks for coming on, man.
Of course.
Do you feel cool now?
I feel so cool.
I knew it.
I hope I can live up to that, but that's going to be a long way to go. But yeah, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate this. I love the work that you do and
thank you.
Advocating for this and the F-bomb.
Yep. I'm thinking about us saying that you sound cool and we sound cool. And then we're going to listen to this later. We were just talking earlier about how the sound of your own voice, it's just, I mean, there goes the cool factor. I can already feel it like seeping out.
Yeah. I don't like how I sound, look. Yeah, you know, there's probably a lot of identity.
There's some stuff. There's some stuff that we... Man, baggage.
I need a pastor.
Or therapist.
That's right.
So I want to know a little bit about your story. We've connected because of, I visited Mosaic. Mm-hmm. So there's that. Mosaic's the name of the church. And I've seen you around, and we've connected because of foster care. And then we had kids that were playing soccer, maybe not on the same team, but we'd saw each other because they're about the same age.
Yeah.
But I don't think I've ever gotten to sit down and just talk to you, besides that time I ambushed you at the coffee shop and was like, hey, we need to talk about.
And then we did that Baylor event. The really awkward Baylor event?
Oh, with the with the panel.
We did this great panel.
Ooh, I'm never going to get invited back.
We did this great panel that was like, I don't know, six or seven of us on the panel, and there was six or seven people in the audience.
Yes, and at least two of them were related to a panelist.
Right.
So
we're like, but anyways, we didn't know each other, and I felt like that's when we got to know each other. And so I felt like this was awesome because we got to interconnect.
There's no
a couple other people
small
there too.
Talk or anything like that. The panel was about an intense subject, and so you get in there, you don't know these people, and you leave, and you're like, there was no small talk or anything like that. We're just, now we know each other.
Yeah. No, that was good.
It was good.
It's a good deep dive.
It was. But again, I reiterate that at least I wasn't invited back.
Nor I.
It's cool.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Yeah.
Well, tell me a little bit about your family, man.
Yeah. Yeah. So we, I have wife, Kristen. We have three boys. So one, ours biologically, he's Knox. He is 11. Mateo is 9, and Jordan is 8, and those two we got to foster and adopt out of right here from McLennan County. And yeah, we've lived in Waco for almost 10 years now. But we just planted a church called Mosaic in Waco here now. And yeah, our journey of foster care is critical to just our whole life outlook and some of the things we talked about on that panel and interracial adoption and fostering changes things and so for us, and I don't know if this is where you want to go, but for us we started fostering, and we probably had 8 kids within 3 years. Mm-hmm. and obviously only got to adopt 2 of those because the goal of foster care is reunification,
yes,
and we definitely want to encourage that.
Yes.
Enthusiastically say that.
I get
cringy when we don't emphasize that.
That's
But for us, we were able to, once we started realizing that Jordan, who came to us when he was a month old, would stick around for longer, we started saying, we really got to make sure we're honoring where he came from.
Because Jordan is a different race.
Jordan is African American.
So we're on a podcast. You can't see Slim. But if you could see Slim, you'd see very fair skin that I'm sure burns easily.
Not that fair. No, and, yeah, fair.
No, totally fair. And he's got blue eyes. And honestly, he kind of looks like my husband, who is fair and blue eyes and Caucasian. So so we're talking about how he and his wife, who is also Caucasian, adopted children that were of different races. And it started with Jordan.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So Jordan came. He's second placement we had. And, yeah, he came when he was a month old. And we started realizing this is going to be a long-term thing. Mm-hmm. And while we're doing that, we just started saying we need to start re-educating ourselves and also exposing ourselves to different different ways of thinking. So we made sure we had different people of color over at our house for dinner and just tried to be intentional about making those relationships and friendships. And in that process, we had, I remember specifically one lady saying to us, make sure you have the talk with him. And I was like, okay, yeah, we'll definitely have the sex talk with him at some point. And
not what she meant.
And not what she meant. And she's like, no, when, you know, how to act around the police. And that was just a... I realized I'm not talking on the same plane right now when we talk about the talk. And so that to me was an eye opener that said, we really got to do a lot more work. And so we started reading a lot more books by men and women of color and making sure we were, you know, educating ourselves as much as possible. And in that process, it almost felt like, you know, I'm a pastor, so I'll make some pastoral references. Paul with the scales falling from his eyes, I felt like we had this, you know, what we call, you know, blindness, what people now talk about. Becoming woke, which has now become more of a slur. But anyways, you're coming aware to your blind spots. Mm-hmm. And one of those blind spots for us was on this issue of race. And so that just woke us up to...
That'll do that whenever it's about your own child.
And, that's why I say I think it's to my shame that I had to go through... It's not shameful to do foster care. It's a good beautiful thing. But it's to my shame that this is what had to do it for me to actually care.
You know, yeah... Listen, and you carry your feelings however you want to feel them. But sometimes when you don't know, you don't know. Yeah. And I feel the same way. I feel that way about the race stuff because, and there is some intentionality about it. Like once you are aware that there is some stuff going on, then it's on you to figure out what you need to do about it and learn about it. Yeah. But I feel the same way about foster care. There are some really wonderful people out there that just don't know what they don't know. And so they're not going, I don't care about this issue. I don't care about these kids.
Right.
They're just walking around blind. And so I hear you, but also, I'm going to go there because you're a pastor. God doesn't work in shame, dude.
No, not at all.
So maybe.
Thank you. Preach the gospel to me.
Might want to dig into that a little bit. Because I don't believe that's coming
the
from.
The gospel too. Yes. it's more just I'm trying to make it clear that this is something that we needed to deal with. Yeah. And so we start going through there. And and to that point, we started making some changes and we started saying, let's try to be intentional about where we live, where we go to school. Mm-hmm. So that they're not always the outlier. And that's not for everyone, but for us, we felt like that was important. And so anyways, then that was also integral into how we wanted to plant our church, and start our church to be intentionally multicultural.
Even the name of the church, right?
Yeah. So a mosaic. And sometimes people were like, so like the mosaic law, we're like, no. Like think of an art piece, you know, all these different pieces coming together to make something more beautiful. And so that's what we want the church to be. It's just people from different cultures coming together. And I think, especially in today's day, like when everything is so polarly divided and when people are, you know, churches are becoming more and more divided, I think it's really hard for an onlooker to look at a church and go like, do you really believe this stuff you're talking about?
Yeah.
And I think when you see groups coming together that do have differences, but that are united by the blood of Christ, then they go, oh, maybe you do believe this. Mm-hmm. So whether you're a Christian or not, listen to this podcast, I think you... If you hear the church saying they believe these things, you actually want to see it happen.
That's right. And we talked about that. Like, I know I didn't. We joke about me ambushing him at a coffee shop, but I totally did. And one of the things I said, because I believe it, is that it's not just what pastors, and not you, I wasn't picking on you, but it's not just what you say. People are looking at what you're doing.
Right.
And whether you're a pastor or whether whatever position of leadership you're in, mm-hmm. it's one thing to say, yeah, we totally believe this and this organization or church or business or group is behind this thing. But if it's just the underlings kind of doing that and not the leader, that speaks volumes. And but what I think is that, and what I appreciate about you and your situation is that in your position of leadership, which happens to be a pastor, people can look at you and watch you walking the walk. You don't talk about just serving others. I see you do it. You don't talk about caring for people that need help. I see you advocating for foster care and for people that are at a disadvantage sometimes. And I think that's important in all positions of leadership to be able to kind of walk that walk as well. I think that you and Kristen do it really well.
Thanks.
So you started fostering somewhere in there. Y'all decided to do a church plant as well.
Right. Make this a little bit harder.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. No, it's cool. Like started a nonprofit with six kids, man. Like
that's right.
This is the way we live.
Things are light. Yeah. Let's make it lighter.
Yeah.
Yeah. We talk about that. We're like, are we just impulsive people doing these things so quickly? And I mean, on one level, I think it's more convictional on these things, but yeah, we take our long time to change on other topics and things.
I mean, but then things work out, right?
We hope, yeah.
I mean,
and I think that's what I appreciate about your podcast and that you guys are honest about, you know, foster care is hard. And so I think what we want, when we were at a church before, seeing other foster parents made us go, oh, it's doable. And so I do think there's a power. And as we talked about a little earlier about sharing stories and like seeing that happen makes people visualize and go, okay, it's not just this ethereal thing that like super saints do. You're like, oh, that's, you know, Bob. And he's kind of a jerk, but he's doing this, whatever it may be. I know that's a terrible story or that analogy, but I think there is power. And I think so for us, we saw that and it was powerful. And so I think since starting Mosaic, it seems like there's quite a bit of foster families that have jumped mm-hmm. in as well.
Absolutely.
And I think that's spurring on more and we're hearing more people saying, hey, I want to jump into it. And, mm-hmm. and I think there is, cause you can see it and you go, okay, even as Slim, the pastor who's doing it and you, there's a temptation to elevate those in leadership as being on a pedestal. But as you just preach the gospel to me, and I'm going to fall and stumble and trip. And so I need that as well. And so I think there is just there's a beauty in seeing it happen. And so I think it's been powerful. And I think it'll continue to do that in a church.
I hope so. And I hope in kind of all walks that it's the storytelling, I think, that brings people in, which is why we do this mm-hmm. podcast is, storytelling is powerful, and mm-hmm. I think that it's, whether it's storytelling and kind of learning your history or storytelling to bring people into a situation, it's that emotional, like it has the, you get the opportunity to create emotional buy-in, which can spur people to action. And we've said before on this podcast, like, not everybody needs to be spurred onto action to be a foster parent.
Right.
There's so many other things, so.
Yeah. And
Go ahead.
I heard this on another podcast. I don't know what it won, so I'll just claim it as my own idea. So what I believe is that if Jesus were alive today, he would be a movie producer. Because when he was around, he was always speaking in parables and telling stories. And
I love that.
The best way to tell stories, if it's not a podcast, although this is becoming more, you know, seems to be a better medium, but movies and shows and things like that are telling stories that disarm people to actually go, oh, now there's a lot of baggage with Christian movies that I pretty much loathe most of them. So I'm advocating for that. But I do think if you can tell this powerful story of, you know, joy and pain and mm-hmm. grief and, you know, sorrow, but amidst all the beauty, you know, people coming together and, mm-hmm. you know, families reuniting. Mm-hmm. Right. So I think there is some power there.
That is absolutely a powerful story. Tell me, so you said you guys have fostered eight kiddos, and your son Jordan was your second placement.
Mm-hmm.
You started re-educating yourself and starting to seek understanding for people who were different than you. started a church to further kind of that along as well.
Yeah.
So when did Mateo come?
Yeah, Mateo came. We actually had a placement, a little baby girl who came to us when she was at maybe 2 days old. We got her from the hospital until she was 9 months old. And so we felt like, you know, it's really hard. And I think, I can't remember, you have a great phrase about like get attached.
Yeah. You got to get too attached.
Yeah. And I think that, so, you know, at some level you're like, oh, I'm scared to do so. But yeah, you get attached. And I think it's good that you get attached. Mm-hmm. The kids deserve it. But then she went to family. So that's like a success in foster care, right?
Yeah.
Reunification. But at that point, our hearts were just so broken. We're like, oh, I think we're done. We told our agency, I think we're done. We need some time. And then like 3 weeks later, they called. They said, we know you said you're done, but there's this boy who's three and parental rights have been terminated. So he's yours if you guys are willing. And for folks who are considering foster care, there's that period of you go like, well, the goal is reunification. So the goal isn't, you know, straight adoption. And so,
but a lot of people don't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's where it's like, no, like that's, and especially after hearing parents' stories and hearing, you know, how they've gotten to the point where this has happened, you feel for them. But for this was like kind of the opposite end of that spectrum where it was just straight adoption, through CPS. And we just said, okay. We'll do it. And it was kind of scary because you're like, I've never met this child and he'll be here forever. And and so he came to us when he was 3 and a half. And that's not that old, but because he was at his age, he had experienced more loss, more trauma.
Yeah.
And, you know, as we talk about how hard foster care is, we're still dealing with it and working through that with him.
Yeah, man. People from hard places have hard behavior sometimes, and that goes for children or adults. You experience trauma, and your brain wants to do everything it can to protect you and make sure that that situation never happens again. So it'll kick on, and your fight or flight, man, that is a hard thing to come up against, and for adults even, but I can't imagine for kids. And
my wife is reading more on the physical effects of trauma that, you know, I can think mentally, emotionally, kind of empathetically about it. But then there's times when, you know, Mateo will act out in the same way that he's acted out for the last 2-3 years that I you know, get angry at it, lose my temper, and I lose any sort of empathy for where he came from. And you know, the phrase that hurt people, I forget that completely, as well as, you know, why is he, you know, continuing to stay up all night? Like, what is it about that? What is it about wanting to go downstairs and steal food from our fridge or from our pantry?
And when you remove yourself from that situation, you know exactly what it is. Yeah. You know exactly why he has these behaviors, but you're
and so
human.
And so you forget these things, and then you get reminded. You go, okay, and it's almost like a reset. But then it happens again and again and again. And anyway, so she's starting to read about more of the actual, like, because of the trauma, your body is actually saying it needs this, not just psychologically or which is also physically, but like there's something about them that is crying out for this. And so I think it just gives you more reason to go like, okay, I understand where someone's coming from. There, by the grace of God, go I. If I was in that position, I would definitely be doing that too.
Right? That's right. When you never know how trauma is going to affect people. And so is she reading The Body Keeps the Score?
Yep. Yeah. Such a good book.
Yes, I know. Yes, and not only for my kids, because I've got three that we've already adopted and one – I tend to lump her in because I know her case is heading towards adoption, but she is not adopted yet. And even though they were placed with us as infants, you know, there's trauma there. And you can read stories and studies and books that tells you even if a baby is removed at birth, There can be trauma in the womb that like creates different neural pathways and the way your body functions under stress. And there's so many factors that go into how a human behaves later that I think we don't know and we're learning about. So I love that you and Kristen are digging into that. And what we're seeing with some of our kids as well, you'd think that because they were placed with us as infants, and I know their whole story and they've never had any trauma besides removal, and a couple of them had two placements. We were their second placement. They don't remember. But if you can imagine, as a baby, your whole goal is to get attached to someone.
Right.
That is it. That's what babies do. And it helps them regulate their temperature and regulate their breathing and their heartbeat. And that is their goal, is to learn how to be a person by attaching to someone. Mm. And so that removal creates trauma. So anyway, all that to say, we see behaviors in our children that, quote unquote, you know, don't have any trauma, but they absolutely do.
Right.
So just learning that is super helpful. And I'm sure Mateo is going to benefit greatly from that. So we talked a little bit about the goal of foster care being reunification and get too attached, and how it was hard on y'all whenever baby girl went home.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that. I what I've seen sometimes is that there is a perpetuation of the idea that foster care is a cheap way to add to your family.
Yeah.
Is that something that you guys have maybe not experienced yourself, but have had to kind of have some talks with people thinking about foster care?
What's interesting is I think going into foster care, so for us, what brought us into it was we read, my wife, Kristen, read this book called A Child Called It by Dave Pelzer. And so if you haven't read it, I highly encourage you to read it.
Slowly. It's a book that you will need to put down and digest and then come back
and
to.
Cry,
you
got
to find something happy to do in between chapters.
Right. Yeah, so she read that when she was in eighth grade. She gave it to me. We were dating in high school when I was a senior and
that
she's a junior.
That is so freaking cute.
And she said, if I'm going to be a pastor's wife, you're going to do foster care. And I was like, okay. So I was like, she's like, read this book. And so this is in high school.
You guys. Oh, my gosh.
Which, yeah, she was fearful of the stereotype of what a pastor's wife should be and needs to be or whatever. And so she's bucking that trend. But she handed me the book.
I knew I liked her.
Right? And so I read it. And yeah, it's such a hard book. It's an emotional, you know, roller coaster that at the end you just read the story of the abuse he receives. And you just go, this can't be. Like, someone needs to step in. Kind of what you just said about, like, once you know, you can't unknow. And so I think once you read that, you're like, of course I have to do something, right? Yeah. You feel compelled. And so I was like, yeah. And so we got, I went to did seminary in North Carolina. We got licensed by CPS out there, but then got a call to come back here to Waco, got relicensed. And that's when it started for us. And so our whole thought was just like, let's just care for these kids. And so it was reunification. It was that. And if a child needed a permanent home, we said, absolutely. Well, you know, you get attached and you're like, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But wasn't until we started to meet birth moms and hear some people from that have had kids taken and their perception of foster parents as being going for the cheap way of getting a kid and maybe skeptically looking at foster parents when we were just, hey, we're just trying to help, trying to love kids and families. And so it was almost like, you know, another blinders falling off. It was more just like a wake up call. Like, oh, there are people that are maybe coming in here with wrong motives. And then there are some that may have mixed motives. And then there are those or maybe they have good motives, but others are seeing them as with wrong motives. Mm-hmm. And so it woke us up to going, we need to be careful and wise with how we speak about this.
Yes. I would also say that there are really great people that are that have unrealistic expectations of what foster care is. Mm-hmm. So I think sometimes people with really great motives, intentions, look at foster care and what they see is, or maybe their knee-jerk assumption is, on the outside looking in, at its simplest form, foster care exists because the children were in an unsafe, dangerous environment that was concerning enough for a government agency to come in and remove those children from whose ever care they were in, whether mm-hmm. it's birth parents or grandparents or whatever. But that's it. In its simplest form is foster care exists to keep kids safe mm-hmm. and remove them from a dangerous situation and put them in a safe situation for however long that takes.
Right.
So I think it is reasonable, not right all the time, but reasonable for people who are unaware of what foster care is and the intricacies mm. of the stories of birth parents to come in and go, birth parents equal dangerous, bad villains.
Yeah.
And I think that's human nature
right.
to want to come in and go, these kids need protection. Well, protection from what? So, and on the one hand, I think that can be a really, that's a good instinct to have, is I want to protect these kids, and that's good.
Yeah.
But I think what happens is whenever people have unrealistic expectations and don't know kind of some of the stories that birth parents are living out, it creates this, what we were talking about earlier, this other and this like division that doesn't necessarily have to be there. And I think sometimes also if you go in and you think my goal is to rescue these kids from what?
Right,
There's got to be a villain.
Yeah.
So rescue these kids and keep them safe.
Yeah.
If you're unwilling to change your perspective and learn about somebody else's story, then I think you're going to stay in that place of being unaware and othering yourself from someone. So
I don't get you in trouble or me in trouble, but
tell me.
There's a lot of, and I see this, I mean, I see this in many, many circles that I'm in. There's a lot of saviorism in foster care, in the church, in church planting. And
oh, we're going to go there.
Right.
I'm happy to go there. And so, okay, to expand on what I was saying earlier, because I was trying to be a little bit more delicate, but I'll just, and I'm going to say this because, like, I'm a Christ follower. You know, a lot of times it's the church where we go in and we're like, we want to save.
Right.
But sometimes these kids, they need a safe place. But we forget that their parents, they need some help too.
Right.
And so let me tell you about what happened. Whenever we got into foster care, it was to serve in some way. And so we knew that, so long story short, but we knew going into foster care that probably loving the kids wouldn't be too much of a challenge.
Yeah.
We knew that we were going to be fostering younger kiddos. That was what would work for our family. So we were like, okay, like, we knew that wouldn't be much of a challenge, but we knew also that loving their parents, that would be the part that would sharpen us. And and not just us, me and my husband, it was an intentional decision that we made because we felt like we were raising our kids in a bubble. And my husband and I come from very different backgrounds. He comes from very stable family. Like, both of his grandparents reached their like 50th wedding anniversary and his parents are still married. And, you know, in every single way, it was a stable environment. And my childhood was not exactly like that. So it was important to me that my kids saw all aspects of what life can look like for other people, because I feel like, and y'all are going to get sick of me saying this on this podcast, but I'm going to say it again. I feel like compassion is like a muscle. If you want it to grow, you got to work it out. So for our kids, we wanted them to grow their compassion muscle. Getting into foster care, we knew that they were going to be exposed to things that were hard. So because of foster care, they have been, and it's been trafficking, and it's been addiction and abuse and poverty and just being at a disadvantage and people making really hard decisions that aren't safe. And so our kids have had to chew on that and work that out, and hopefully, and I'm going to say they have come to this conclusion because I've heard them and how they speak, but that bad decisions don't always equal bad people.
Yeah. Yeah.
So all that to say, I thought I had a good handle because of my background on giving people the benefit of the doubt whenever they're in hard situations. I know everyone has a story.
Yeah.
But whenever we received our first placement, mom was dangerous. She was at a place where it wasn't safe for her to kind of be alone with kiddos. And, you know, she was just deep in her addiction. She was having a hard time. But on paper, her and I were two sides of the same coin. We had similar backgrounds. We were the same age. And I remember just being so irritated, so frustrated, like, why doesn't she just make better choices? And for me, I was going, well, I came from hard stuff and I made better choices. Why? And I was frustrated, and not frustrated like condemnation, but frustrated because I wanted better for her.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until later on, geez, and this is so cliche, but this is exactly what happened. You know that song, In the Eye of the Storm?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a part that goes, when addiction steals my baby girl. And it's told from the perspective of a father, but I swear to you, God thumped me on my head and went, hey, she's my baby girl. Addiction stole my baby girl. This isn't what I wanted for her life. And I was like, oh, man.
Yeah.
Man. And it was just so convicting.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, well, I got some work to do as well. All that to say, we've got to shift our perspective, and not everybody has a moment at first going into foster care where they reach that. But I think eventually it comes for all of us.
And yeah. I mean, so knowing that woman, any of these parents that do lose children over addiction, substance abuse, and more talking about that in specific, knowing that alcohol and drugs are the ways they're medicating the pain, not that they're trying to choose to just give up on life. It is that they have had stuff hit them hard on some level or whatnot, that it gives you an opportunity to go like, oh, well, I medicate it maybe differently with sugar, with Netflix, and maybe some of the other things as well, right? And so I think that's where I think we go, there, but by the grace of God go I. And I think that's where we can go like, I'm a couple decisions away from making that same choice.
Oh, I say the same thing. Like we all are, I think, about three.
So if we want someone to give us grace,
away from being exactly where someone else is.
Yeah. So if we want someone to give us grace, then we need to give them as well.
Yeah, the kids need some help, but I think we lose sight because the parents are adults now, that maybe whenever they were kids, they needed help too.
Yeah.
And, so if we can come in from a perspective of, I would say, open-mindedness and curiosity about their stories, maybe instead of this us versus them thing, we can help them understand if we can get there and if it's real, that we're all on the same team.
Yes.
We are on kids being safe team.
Yeah. And that's, I think it goes into what you were talking about before. Save from what? And I think we come in and we say with our savior complex that we will save them from the enemy, which is the parents in this situation, versus the situation that their kids are in, because the kids want to go back to the parents.
That's
no
right.
matter how bad it has been. And you always see that. Now we could say, there's some stuff there, but like they want to go back, and we say reunification is the goal because that's where they were intended to be. Now there's times when it doesn't work out that way, but the goal is that, because we would say, I think we want to come in with not with a scarcity mindset, but an abundance mindset that, like, the parents, there's hope there for them to change. And so if we ever want someone to give us, like, hope for change, mm-hmm. we want someone to come in and be like, hey, I'm not going to assume, like, the worst about
That's
you.
That's right.
I want to assume the best. And I also want to see you grow because we're not finished products. And so we want to hope the best for these parents. Mm-hmm. It may be a lot longer journey for them.
Yeah. But the way, one way, if you're willing to make them, to set them up for success, is to let them know that you are not the enemy.
Yeah.
That you want success for them, that you want what is best for them. And
right.
it's hard. And in not every situation does that work out. Some situations, it's just not possible to have a productive and safe relationship
right.
with parents because of their own stuff that they're going through. And I totally get that. So let's just put that out there. We know that there are extreme cases on either side of the spectrum, but we're talking kind of the majority of the cases
right.
in the middle.
Yeah.
There can be some common ground. And if you're looking for common ground, the common ground is the kids.
Yeah.
So if we go in and we don't other people and we come at it with a perspective of curiosity and a willingness to understand, perhaps what we would see in some parents who have these defenses up because they have a really reasonable but maybe misguided perception of foster parents and their motives.
Yeah.
Maybe we can aid in their success.
Yeah.
By making sure that they know that we're on their team, and that we're on Team Kid.
Yes. And I think foster parents, maybe those listening to the podcast, I think we all, myself included, if we go back into fostering, we're closed now, but we all need to check our motives and ask that question. Mm. Am I in this for the kids, or am I in it for them to join our family? So even when we say we're there foster to adopt, is it really just to adopt?
That's right.
And so are we actually excited? And you get attached. It's sad when a kid mm-hmm. leaves, but also it's like, this is the goal. This is the goal. This is a success. This is a win.
That's right.
And we got to celebrate those wins mm-hmm. when that happens.
That's
Not bemoan them. But I get that it's hard.
It is hard.
Because we love them so much.
Exactly. Well, and I'm gonna say something that I kind of came to the realization of, and it's a little bit of a harsh realization, but I think that it's true. I think people, me even, the fear going into foster care for a lot of people, like you said, is, but they might leave,
mm-hmm.
but I'll get too attached and it's going to hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that comes from this false sense of security that if you have biological children, that they can't be taken from you.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, we're not promised tomorrow with our children, mm-hmm. period.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they are biological or adopted or foster,
yeah.
we are not promised tomorrow with our kids. And I know that's a hard way to look at things, but that's the truth. Just because they are ours biologically does not mean that we get them forever.
Right.
And so I think that
nor do we get them forever anyways.
I know we don't get them anyway, yeah. but like you don't know what happens yeah. in the span of a childhood. And you don't want to think about stuff like that. But I think there is this kind of false sense of security because that's a maybe it'll happen. But the thing is, maybe it'll happen in foster care.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that there is a calling, if you're going to listen to it, to stand in the gap in whatever way is your right way to stand in the gap for people. And so for us, it was foster care, and then it was different ways of standing in the gap. And right now it's this podcast. You find your way to stand in the gap.
Mm.
And so I think that if we kind of look at it that way and not what am I going to gain from it,
yeah,
that's kind of where we need to be is what's your way to stand in the gap?
Yeah. Yeah, which I think is there's a guy named Jason Johnson, right? Know him. Okay, so he did the illustration, and I'm sure he's taken it from someone else as well, but the illustration of you come up to a river and there's all these babies floating down the river, and he's like, foster parents are the ones that just want to jump in and help and just mm-hmm. help these babies. But I think his illustration was. Okay, that's one way of getting in the gap. Another way is asking, you know, like, wait, some of these kids are going over the cliff. What do we do with them? And that's when kids are going to the prison system and things like that. And you go like, how can we, you know, love and care there? And then another way of standing the gap is going, well, why are these kids in the system in the first place? And that's when you go to kind of structural systemic issues and you think about policies and things like that. And then there's the ways of helping the parents who are foster parents who are jumping in, whether it's, you know, sitting and things like that and getting licensed and all of the, you know,
all of the things
to love foster parents. Well, there's a lot of different ways to jump in. And I think that's can be overwhelming, but also encouraging that I think not everyone's called to be a foster parent, but I think everyone should love and care for these kids in some way. And I think that's, there's opportunities there.
There's everywhere. And one of the things I had said not too long ago, I don't know exactly how I said it, but it's every little thing. Every little thing matters. And so if we have a lot of people that are going, well, there's just the thing that I can contribute is too small. Well, if you wait for the thing that you want to contribute to be enough to change the course of foster care, you're just going to be waiting forever. Because individually, we're not enough.
Yeah.
But if we all do our thing, no matter how minuscule we think it is, we can be enough together.
Yeah.
So.
That's good.
That's kind of what I think.
Seems pretty good.
All right. Okay. Well, before I let you get out of here, because I know you've got some cool thing after this.
Parent-teacher conferences. That's so cool.
So, listen, we're maintaining our cool status.
Right, right.
Your name is Slim Thompson. Come on.
Going clubbing later.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I want to know, what was your F-bomb moment? When did you know that because of foster care, your life was never going to be the same again?
That would probably be our first child that came to us and just said, oh, she's so precious. It's going to be hard to say goodbye. And she went 3 months later. Celebration, yay, win moment, but it was like, whew, we're doing this more. We've got to, you know, we want to jump in. And so, you know, forever, I realized forever our life was changed then. And then I think it got expounded when we talked about with Jordan, who then our eyes and scales fell from our eyes with things on race and things like this. And so she said, whew, yeah, we're different people than we are. And that's a good thing.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
And we should always be changing, growing.
Amen.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming in.
Yeah, Amanda, thank you so much. Appreciate you having us on, me on, and love to support you in more and more ways we can.
Thank you. All right, y'all. Have a good one. Mandy and the F-Bomb is produced by Rogue Media. Make sure to like and follow us on social media. And you can find our show anywhere you get podcasts or at roguemedianetwork.com.
This has been a Rogue Media podcast.